All right, let's dive into this one.
Okay.
This is a pretty exciting battle and kind of a weird one too, right?
Yeah, it has those elements that you just wonder, how could this have happened?
We're talking about the Battle of Gibeon and, of course, the whole Joshua's Long Day thing.
Right.
So where do we even start with this?
Well, the Gibeonites are Canaanite city.
Okay.
But they're kind of outside the main group.
Oh, okay.
And they realize that the Israelites are coming. They're on the march.
Right.
And they're conquering everybody.
And they're not messing around.
And they're not messing around, no.
Yeah.
And so they send this delegation to Joshua and the Israelites to try to make a treaty.
Oh, so they're like, let's get ahead of this.
Yeah, they're like, we don't want to be destroyed.
Let's not get destroyed.
So they come, and they're like, we're from a far country.
They're trying to trick them.
They're trying to trick them, yeah.
Oh, wow.
And they have all these, like, worn-out clothes and moldy bread.
Like, oh, we've been traveling so long.
Yeah, we just want to make a treaty with you.
We just want to be friends.
And the Israelites, they don't inquire of the Lord.
Oh, they mess up.
Yeah, they kind of jump the gun on this one.
Yeah, they don't pray about it or anything.
No, and they make a treaty with them.
Wow.
And then 3 days later, they realize that the Gibeonites are actually their neighbors.
Oh, that's got to be awkward.
Yeah, so they're bound by an oath.
They've already made this treaty.
They can't attack them.
So they're stuck with it.
They're stuck.
Oh, man.
But now you have five Amorite kings who are really ticked off.
Oh, no.
Because the Gibeonites made a treaty with the Israelites.
Right, because they're supposed to all be on the same team.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So they form this coalition.
Oh, so now it's a 5-on-1.
It's a 5-on-1.
Okay.
And they go to attack Gibeon.
So Gibeon is in trouble.
Gibeon's in trouble.
But they have this treaty with Israel.
They send word to Joshua. Hey, help us.
Like, hey, we tricked you, but come help us out.
Come help us out. Exactly.
Okay, so what does Joshua do?
Well, Joshua's not going to back down from this.
Okay.
He's committed to the oath, even though it was made under false pretenses.
Right. He's a man of his word.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So he does a night march from Gilgal, where he was camped.
Okay.
All the way up to Gibeon.
That's got
to
be a long way, right?
It is. And it's a surprise attack.
They're not expecting that.
The Amorites are caught completely off guard.
Oh, wow.
And the Israelites just rout them.
They just, like, completely crush them.
Completely crush them.
So God's on their side here.
Oh, yeah.
But he does something even crazier, right?
Yeah, this is where it gets even wilder.
With the hailstorm.
The hailstorm.
So what happens? They're chasing them, and then...
Well, it says that God hurls down hailstones from heaven.
Wow.
On the Amorites.
So they're running away and then just...
And they're getting pelted?
Like rocks from the sky.
Basically.
This is crazy.
Yeah.
And the hailstones actually kill more than the swords.
That's what it says, yeah.
So this is a decisive victory.
Oh, yeah. Okay, but then...
Then we get to the long day.
That's the big question.
Yeah.
That's what everybody wants to know about.
Right.
So what happens? I mean, give us the setup for this.
So the Amorites are fleeing.
Okay.
And Joshua,
uh-huh.
He wants to finish the job.
He wants to make sure that they're completely defeated.
Completely. And he realizes that the sun is going down.
Okay.
And he utters this famous prayer.
He prays for the sun to stand still.
Or, in some translations, to be silent.
Okay, so he's basically asking for more daylight.
More time to finish the battle.
And so this is where people are like, wait a minute. Did the sun actually stop?
And time actually stop.
So what do the sources say?
Well, it gets really interesting because it's at this point that the text shifts into poetry.
Oh.
It becomes this very poetic description of what happens.
So it's not just straight up historical narrative anymore.
Right.
It's like almost like a song. Yeah, like a song or a poem celebrating the victory.
Okay, so how do we interpret that?
Well, we have to think about how poetry works, right?
Okay.
It uses symbolism, metaphor, imagery.
Right. To evoke an emotion.
Exactly. To make a point.
So when we're looking at this, we can't just take it as a literal scientific account.
Okay, so maybe the sun didn't literally stop in the sky.
Maybe not.
But the point is that God gave them an incredible victory.
A complete victory.
Yeah.
And this poetic language is conveying the magnitude of that.
So it's like when we say, I'm so hungry, I could eat a horse.
Exactly. You're not literally going to eat a horse.
No. No, hopefully not.
But it emphasizes how hungry you are.
Right. It's an exaggeration.
Exactly.
To make a point.
And that's what we see in the Bible, too.
Give me an example.
Well, think about the Song of the Sea in Exodus.
Okay, yeah.
It describes the Egyptians sinking like lead in the sea.
Right.
but they're already on the seabed.
They've already drowned. It's not about buoyancy. It's about the completeness of their destruction.
Right. It's about emphasizing the power of God's victory.
Exactly.
Okay, so maybe this long day in Joshua is doing something similar.
Maybe it's highlighting the utter defeat of the Amorites.
And the fact that God was in control the whole time.
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay.
And if you look at the poem itself,
yeah,
it emphasizes that it was God who commanded the sun and moon to stop.
So it's God's power on display.
Right. It's not just a random cosmic event.
God is orchestrating this whole thing.
Exactly.
That's fascinating.
And this echoes the earlier parts of the battle.
Right. With the panic and the hailstones.
It's all pointing to God's direct involvement.
Yeah. Okay. I'm starting to see this in a new light.
Good.
But some people might say, wait a minute. The Bible literally says there has never been a day like it.
Right.
Like, that sounds pretty literal to me.
It does sound literal, but if you look closely at the verse.
Okay.
It's actually emphasizing God's unique response to Joshua's prayer.
Oh, interesting.
It says, the Lord heeded the voice of a man because the Lord fought for Israel.
So the emphasis is on God's action.
And his faithfulness to his people.
It's not just about the length of the day.
It's about God's personal intervention in history.
Yeah, he answers Joshua's prayer in a dramatic way.
And that's what makes it a day unlike any other.
Okay, so even if the sun didn't literally stand still,
right,
the miracle is still there.
Absolutely.
God's power is still evident.
It's about God's relationship with his people.
And his willingness to act on their behalf.
Exactly.
Wow, this is really making me rethink how I understand this whole event.
Good.
It's not just about a long day, it's about so much more.
Exactly.
All right, so we've got this amazing victory fueled by divine intervention and celebrated through this incredible poetry.
Right.
But what happens next?
Well, that's where things get even more interesting.
Oh, boy. What else could happen?
Because the conquest isn't over yet.
There's more.
Oh, yeah. This is just the beginning.
Okay, well, I guess we'll have to dive into that in part two.
Sounds good.
All right, listeners, stay tuned for more of this epic story.
Welcome back, folks. We're picking up right where we left off. The Israelites, fresh off their victory at Gibeon, are now facing a new threat up north.
Oh, so they can't even catch their breath.
Nope, the conquest isn't a walk in the park.
So who's this new enemy they have to deal with?
This time, it's a king named Jabin, who rules a powerful city called Hazor.
Hazor, okay.
And Jabin, well, he's got chariots.
Oh, no, not chariots.
Lots of them.
Those things were like the ancient tanks, right?
Pretty much.
Deadly, especially if you're just a foot soldier.
Yeah, the Israelites didn't really have a good answer for chariots at this point.
So how do they handle this? Are they intimidated?
Not Joshua.
He's fearless.
He's on a roll after those victories in the south.
And he trusts God.
Right. Exactly. He rallies his troops and marches north to confront Jabin.
Brave move going up against all those chariots.
Well, he has God on his side, remember.
Right. So what happens? Does God send another hailstorm their way?
This time, it's more about strategy.
Okay. How so?
God tells Joshua to do something pretty drastic.
What? Like a sneak attack or something?
Even bolder than that, he tells him to hamstring the Canaanite horses and burn their chariots.
Whoa, that's taking away their biggest weapon.
Exactly. Neutralize their advantage.
That must have been a tough call for Joshua.
It shows his obedience and faith.
He's not just waiting for God to do everything for him.
It's a partnership, human effort, combined with divine guidance.
I like that. So what happens at this Battle of Merom? Does this plan actually work?
It does. The Israelites cripple the chariots and completely rout Jabin's forces.
Another major victory.
They scatter the enemy and secure the north.
So they've won in the south, they've won in the north. Are they done now?
Well, not so fast.
There's more.
It's not as simple as winning a few big battles.
What do you mean?
The Promised Land is a vast territory.
Okay.
There are still pockets of Canaanite resistance all over.
So it's not a clean sweep.
No, they've made huge strides, but there's still work to do.
Like mopping up operations?
Kind of. The sources show that the conquest was a gradual process.
So what are some of the challenges they face during this settlement period? It's like we've been talking about this huge battle, right?
Yeah.
And you win a few big ones, you'd think that's it, right?
You'd think so.
Everyone goes home.
Everyone celebrates, yeah.
But it sounds like that's not what happened.
No, not at all.
So what was it like for the Israelites after these big victories?
Well, the sources tell us that even after these big wins, you know, the Israelites still had a lot of work to do.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, think about it. They were supposed to drive out the Canaanites.
Right, right. That was the whole point.
But they didn't exactly get rid of everyone.
So there were still Canaanites living in the land.
All over the place, in fact.
So what happened? Did they just, like, live side by side?
Well, it was complicated.
I bet.
I mean, they were supposed to dry them out,
uh-huh.
but the sources show that some tribes really struggled with that. Yeah, they made treaties with the Canaanites.
What?
They even intermarried sometimes.
So they started mixing with the people they were supposed to be driving out?
It happened. And, you know, sometimes they even picked up some of the Canaanite culture.
Oh, wow.
And their religion, which is a big deal.
That doesn't sound good. I mean, God had just given them this land. And they're already turning away from him.
It was a constant temptation.
So what was so appealing about the Canaanite religion?
Well, a lot of it had to do with fertility and prosperity.
Okay.
It was very nature-based, very focused on the land and the harvest.
So it's like, if we worship these gods, our crops will grow better.
Something like that, yeah.
And I guess that was tempting for people who were trying to settle a new land.
Definitely. They wanted to feel secure.
To make a good living.
And the Canaanite religion seemed to offer that.
But wasn't that a problem? I mean, they were supposed to worship Yahweh.
It was a huge problem. It led to what we call religious syncretism.
Syncretism.
Yeah, it's basically when you blend different religions together.
So they were mixing the worship of Yahweh with the worship of these other gods.
Exactly, and that was a major no-no.
So what happened? Did God just let them do this?
Well, God is patient.
Okay.
He sent prophets to warn them, to call them back to him.
But they didn't always listen.
No, they kept getting drawn back into those old ways.
And that led to problems?
It did.
Oh.
The sources show that when they turned away from God, things went badly for them.
It's like they were forgetting everything God had done for them.
Right. He had freed them from slavery.
Freed them to this land.
And they were throwing it all away.
It's kind of a sad story.
It is, but there's also a message of hope there.
Really?
Yeah, because even when they messed up, God never gave up on them.
He was always there to welcome them back.
Always ready to forgive.
That's pretty amazing.
It is, and I think it's a message that resonates with us even today.
You mean like, we all make mistakes.
We all stray from the path sometimes.
Yeah, but God's always there for us.
Always ready to offer a second chance.
That's encouraging.
It is. And I think that's one of the big takeaways from this whole deep dive.
You mean it's not just about ancient history and battles.
It's about God's faithfulness.
And his love for his people.
Exactly.
Wow, this has really been an incredible journey.
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
We've covered so much ground. From those epic battles to the challenges of settling the promised land and the spiritual struggles the Israelites faced.
It's a story that's full of twists and turns.
And important lessons for us today.
Absolutely.
Well, listeners, we hope you found this deep dive as fascinating as we have.
We encourage you to keep exploring.
Keep questioning.
And keep diving deep into the stories that shape our understanding of faith and history.
Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.